This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by MetLife and Grantham University. Now, here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week, we'll highlight AFGE's recent Region B training conference with National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, Local 3840 Women's and Fair Practices Coordinator Antoinette Jones, and Transportation Security Administration, Local 778 President Vaughn Glenn. But first, we've been joined by AFGE 6th District National Vice President Arnold Scott. NVP Scott, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jason.
You are the host NVP of this week's AFGE Region B training conference here in Indianapolis. Set the scene for us. What is it like so far this week?
Yeah, so far it's been great. I mean, we're hoping that this training conference, that people are going to get trained in RIF procedures, financial officers training, collective bargaining, litigation, all those things that good, you know, stewards need to know in order to carry out their duties.
How important is it to have training seminars like these to empower and arm the members with this information to take back to the workplace?
It's extremely important, you know, because as we all know, education is power. The agency has to train their people, in the union we need to train our people on how to conduct business and how to handle grievances, how to do arbitrations, how to do Merit System Protection Board cases, EEO cases. Our people need training just like everybody else.
For our listeners out there, of course, the Region B training this week includes AFGE members from the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th districts. What has the reception been of your members in District 6 about the training?
Everybody, so far, I haven't heard a complaint. Everybody seems to be in class, seems to be having a good time.
So one of the trainings that I'm looking at here is the social media training. Talk mm-hmm. about how your members in District 6 have picked up social media as a put that as a tool in their chest of skills.
Well, I don't think it's just my members in District 6. I think when you talk about all our members, that they're getting into Facebook, Twitter, and all of those social media sites that's out there. And I mean, just like anything else, it's a mechanism for communicating. And when you're talking about our young people, they exclusively use that. So, I mean, us older folks like me, you know, that I prefer communicating in person. They prefer using Facebook, Twitter, and those type things. And, you know, for those of you who are parents, I mean, you should understand what I'm saying because, you know, if you try to reach young people by phone, they won't return your call. But one thing I found, if you text them, if you email them, you know, if you go up on Facebook, you go up on Twitter, you get an immediate response from them. So it's a way to communicate.
You've been in the labor movement quite a while. How have some of those communication tools changed over the years throughout your career?
I mean, it's changed a whole lot. And I'm probably one of the few people that, I mean, you know, I don't like change. I can remember back when I was a local president and they were talking about pagers. You know, I would tell my secretary that I was going over to one of the buildings and she'd say, well, we don't want you to go over there because, well, we won't see you again because you'll be out talking with everybody and you'll forget about everything. We're going to get you a pager. And I said, I'm not carrying a pager. You know, eventually I wound up getting a pager, you know. And then when I became a national rep, you know, then the thing was telephones, you know. I can remember when you had the bag phones that you used to carry around in the car. I probably still got one of them somewhere. But, you know, everything is so modernized now and things have changed. And You know, now everything is, iPhone, and they still laugh at me, as a matter of fact, Jason, because I'm here at this training, and one of our instructors wrote, Timmy, I have an iPhone 3G. And when I pull my phone out, he starts laughing, and he'll say to me, when you going to get rid of that phone? And I tell him, when the iPhone 5s come out.
Holding out for the latest and greatest, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find that those tools, even though you may be resistant to change in some ways, do you find that those tools help you do your job more efficiently? Do you find that those tools help you communicate and stay connected to the membership a little easier?
I think it truly does. You know, I think that I'm a firm believer that we got to use all type communications. You know, and even though we got this new, the Twitter and all of this right here, I still believe that you got to use some of the old along with the new.
Being able to effectively communicate verbally, the written sense, those things still matter, right?
Right, right.
Do you see the membership grabbing onto these tools as a way to further the message for AFGE? Do you see them using these tools more?
I think the membership is excited about it. You know, I come to these trainings, and, I sat around and I listened, and, I learn new things at every training. I mean, just I'm amazed at some of the things that people utilize it for.
Not long ago, you and I had a conversation about a situation at the Defense Finance and Accounting Service where we had a number of employees being laid off because of credit issues. Where does that situation stand today?
The situation's still the same. They're waiting on a decision from the Conyers case by the judge. But, as I was telling you earlier, we still have people getting laid off. Being terminated. One or two people every week I'm hearing somebody new that's been terminated. And, we're still filing those cases, and we're going to the Merit System Protection Board, and we're winning the cases before the Merit System Protection Board. But, when you win those cases, basically what happens is the case gets put on hold. You got some judges who will grant interim relief to the employees, and other judges won't. And that's up to the judge's discretion. When I say interim relief, that means an employee who, when you win the case, the judge will say, place this employee on administrative leave, and that employee is being paid while they are on administrative leave, and they're sitting at home. But the agency is not getting any work out of them, because the agency won't allow them to come back to work until a decision has come down. And then you got employees who the judge is not granting interim relief, because they don't believe in it. And like I said, it's totally up to the judge. And in those cases, what's happening is, you have employees who are being devastated. They're losing their houses, losing their cars, becoming homeless. And, it's like nobody cares. The sad situation about it, in that situation, when the Conyers decision comes down, if they rule in favor of the employee, these employees have lost everything that they have. Okay, let's say the judge orders back pay and that they come back to work. Okay, what does that mean for these employees? It means that they got to fill out another FS 85P or 86P, whatever the number is, and that employee is still subject to the same questions that they have. And if they didn't have bad credit, let's say they didn't owe the debt that they were accused of owing. Now they've been devastated. They've lost everything, and their credit is bad. It doesn't make sense. It does no good to the person who the money is owed to. It doesn't help them. It doesn't help the employee. And in a lot of cases, I'm hearing where supervisors are saying, this employee is an outstanding employee. I don't want them to go. They doing their job, and they doing a great job. But yet and still, the agency saying that you got to let these people go. They don't want them to go, but you know, it's like the employees are just caught up in limbo. And as I stated before, these employees, I'm having a hard time understanding why just because an employee is a federal worker that they're supposed to be different than any other employee out here in the workforce, you know, in the country, period. I mean, all of them are having rough times and tough times. Why does the federal government terminate its employees, but then, you know, in the private sector, I mean, they do it sometimes, but not like the federal government. It's like the federal government has become the collection agency for all of these companies.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with AFGE 6th District National Vice President Arnold Scott. MVP Scott, do you see this situation almost as an example of a larger problem of the denigration of public employees?
I honestly believe that that's it, you know. I mean, you see what you see going on right now. I mean, I think that it's a way when the agency is looking at how can we save money or how can we conduct a reduction in force. I mean, I just basically see the agencies utilizing this and getting rid of employees and not having to go through the RIF procedure and give employees what they're entitled to. They're basically running a RIF without having to comply with their own regulations and the laws.
Almost a back-end way of reducing the number of staff, reducing the number of people that need to be paid, because you, as you indicated earlier, clearly this is negatively impacting the employee who's got a debt that he or she would want to pay off. But also you mentioned that managers, supervisors think that the employees are doing a good job. So who's really behind it?
You know, Jason, I'm not sure. When you talk to defense, finance, accounting people, they'll say it's not them. You talk to the Department of Defense, the Department of Defense say it's not them. Talk to the Washington Headquarters Services. Washington Headquarters Services says it's not them. You know, nobody wants to be accountable for what is happening to these employees. And I just think it's outrageous. I just think that nobody should be treated the way that these employees are being treated. And, you know, I really think that Congress needs to step up and needs to enact some legislation to fix this problem, because I don't think employees should be treated this way.
Clearly, there's a negative impact here on the employees who are losing their jobs.
Yes, it is. And you know, the sad part about it is if you look at the stats, and I think I may have talked about this the last time that I was on the show, it's predominantly affecting females, single parent, and minorities. And, you know, I just think it's horrible.
What about the employees who are left behind? Do you find some that are concerned about their own job safety?
Yeah, everybody's concerned about it. I mean, those employees are still working on pins and needles, because every 5 years, from my understanding, you have to fill out one of these SF-85Ps. And, you know, if you do something wrong, I mean, it's a problem. I got a case right now where the individual filled out the FS-85P, and she filled it out right. She filled it out for another job. She passed the security clearance, and then when she went to work for DFAS, she filled it out the same way that she filled it out before. The agency, one of the people in the agency, changed one of her answers and initial beside it, stating that they changed it, and it caused her to not clear the security. And, you know, it's one of the cases that I have up. I've sent up to the national, and our attorneys is handling it now. I mean, but the agency admits that they changed her answer and created the problem.
So the agency can go ahead and change an employee's answer on a questionnaire without consulting with the employee first?
Well, that's what they did in this case. So it'll be interesting when we take this case to court. But, you know, the employee will be in the same situation. The way I see it is we'll win the case. You know, that she may get constructive relief. She may not get constructive relief. But, she'll be another employee sitting out there in limbo waiting on the Conyers decision. And in this case right here, the agency is the one who changed their answer, admits that they changed it, and created the problem. So it's almost like once they come down with a something that says that your security, that you can't hold this security clearance, then, I mean, it's almost like even if they make the mistake, nobody can correct it. And, you know, it's the employee that's penalized for the mistake that they made.
As you're waiting for the Conyers decision to come down, ultimately, are you optimistic that you can get these terminated employees their jobs back?
Well, we have, in some cases, the judge has ordered that they be brought back, but the agency appealed it, and you got to go through this long appeals process, and that's where we're at right now. It's something that may wind up before the Supreme Court, before it's settled.
As you look ahead to the rest of 2012, and of course now we sit here in the middle of the year in July, what are you most looking forward to as we work our way towards the end of the year?
The big thing that we're all looking forward to right now is the election that's coming up. Every election year we say this is the most important election in our lifetime, but I can truly look back and say I don't remember an election that's more important than this election, not just to me as an individual and my family, but I mean to the labor movement. It's extremely important.
When you look at that situation and you say, yes, this is probably the most important election of your lifetime, what's at stake here? What are people faced with in the choice?
I don't know. When you talk about what's at stake here, I think there's a lot at stake. I mean, if you sit back and you look at what this crazy group is trying to change all the laws, and interfere with the right, the basic right to even have a vote. I mean, the requirement to have a show ID in order to discharge your constitutional right, because that's what I think it is, a constitutional right. It's just crazy what's going on. It's almost like turning the clock back 100 years, when you listen to some of the people who has went through this. I mean, my generation, when I was coming up, I guess I'm kind of like this generation right here. It was given to me and it was taken for granted that, this is something that was given and it would always be there. But now you find out that it's not guaranteed that it's something that you got to continuously fight for and refight this battle, because it's the same old thing again.
Just because you fought and won it once doesn't mean that
you'll
keep it forever.
Doesn't mean you won't have to fight it again. And I think about when it says every generation has to reaffirm its right. To me, that's where we at right now. You got people out here that right to work, want to pass right to work legislation. It's all about tax cuts to the super rich for this radical group, and it has nothing to do with the people. Nothing to do with the people. I mean, the people, they want to repeal health care that the president passed, which is for all the people, just so that they can have their tax cuts for the super rich, because they don't want to have to pay. They want to stuff their money in the bank and not have to pay health care, because I'm privileged enough that I can have money where if I get ill, then I can take care of myself. And if I can't take care of myself, then guess what? The taxpayers will take care of it for me. I think it's so wrong. I mean, they don't want the people to have anything. The people who's paying the bill, let's put it that way.
Do you think that puts even more importance on the labor movement to stand up for middle-class working Americans and make sure that their voices are heard?
Oh, I think we definitely got to do that. To me, there's no backing down. This fight that we're in this year, I see it as a fight for to exist.
AFGE 6th District National Vice President Arnold Scott. It is always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for your time and hosting us here this week in Indianapolis.
Thank you, Jason. I'm always glad to be on the show.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from AFGE's Region B training with National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, Local 3840, Women's and Fair Practices Coordinator Antoinette Jones.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. To see how much you could save, call the AFGE Benefits Hotline at 1-888-844-2343 to get the members-only phone number from MetLife. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
I just earned my degree at Grantham University, and now I'm on my way to a promotion.
Grantham University?
The affordable online classes fit my schedule, plus I earn college credit for work experience.
How can I fast-track my degree at Grantham University?
Go to fasttrackedu.com.
Fasttrackedu.com?
Yes, fasttrackedu.com. If you're an AFGE member, you qualify for a tuition discount. Check out Grantham University today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Joined now by Antoinette Jones, AFGE Local 3840's Women's Fair Practice Coordinator, as well as the EEO Advisory Council Chair for the local. Antoinette, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
So as we sit here today at the Region B training in Indianapolis, tell me about your classes that you've taken so far and some of the experiences you've had in this training.
Well, today and for the whole week, I have been EEOAC intensed. I have attended, my whole purpose in coming to this training was to receive a further training in EEOAC, Equal Employment Opportunities Commission. And in Cincinnati, we have an Equal Employment Opportunities Advisory Council. And we serve the whole institute at the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. So we have people also on the committee that aren't a part of the union necessarily. What happens is we're supposed to have management participation, and management sends two individuals per division, and that's how we address EEOAC concerns in Cincinnati at the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health.
Tell me about your reason for coming here. Was it something that you maybe experienced in the workplace? Are you trying to further your education as a union steward? Is it a combination of the two?
Well, I am no longer functioning as a union steward. I was functioning as a union steward in the beginning of my relationship with AFGE. I've always been a strong supporter of unions and a member of the union's dues-paying member. And as I attended the meetings, I saw the need. So when requests went out for a new chair for the EEOAC and for the union's representation, I volunteered. My expectation was to come to Indianapolis and be able to receive further training to better serve the people that were that are our members in Cincinnati. There were some issues that were coming up that the management decided they wanted to dissolve the EEO, not clearly understanding their rights. So it was my responsibility at that point to educate management and educate the members about what was important and why we needed to have the EEOAC. It was really interesting. Management invited me to a meeting about 2 months ago to decide to dissolve the EEOAC. And they said, no, we have a federal mandate. I don't think you can really do this. So after we had much discussion, I solicited from the EEOC office in D.C. They sent a representative to do some educational training. And at the end of the year meeting is normally what we have, where we present initiatives that have taken place for the EEOAC throughout the year, where all of the higher managers attend. When that happens, we participated in providing that training, and that training was the pivotal point where management understood that this is a federally mandated opportunity. And that federally mandated opportunity allowed them to receive some more education and further understanding about what functions the EEOAC performed in the agency. That being said, it was really important for me to educate the participants. All of us belong to this protected class. Whether we want to or not, we all in some way fit into this protective class of people and individuals that seek protection under the EEOAC. What can we do cohesively to protect each other's rights?
How would you describe your overall relationship with management at this time?
A lot of times it is non-adversarial at NIOSH. I do hear that it's not that way in other institutes. There is a imposed politeness, and we are civil. We appear to be reasonable. Now, sometimes the reasonableness is implied, not really understood. However, it is my job. I take the higher road there. I assume that people don't have an ability to communicate because they don't understand, or we don't have the same. We may not have the same position on a particular topic, but we need to get to a place where education is first. And once we're both educated, then there's a responsibility that comes after being educated about communication and what action steps we need to take next to serve the members and the staff.
Despite some of the challenges that you discussed a minute ago, do you think that management understands the importance of these EEO protections that are in place, that are federal mandates?
No.
Why is that? Why is that lost upon them?
Because it's not a requirement. And see, once it gets to the point when a law is passed and it's understood that this is a law and we have to adhere to it, the information about it kind of goes away. And it feels like we're rebuilding it over and over again when an issue comes up, but it's never went anywhere. But what happens is management doesn't get education. And I think it's the union's responsibility to help create an environment where there's constant education about the protected class of individuals that includes all employees. So I think it's a lack of education and training.
Are you able to impress upon them the importance of these laws, the requirements of them, and educate them a little bit to maybe see a little progress being made?
Absolutely. They have been receptive. I go to the CLMPC meeting, that's Senior Leadership Management meetings at the agency at NIOSH, and there's some frank dialogue there. Why they don't want to participate, why it takes away from their staff, well, we can't get anybody to volunteer, we don't have our people participating. And I kind of just say to them, it comes from the top down. This is a federal mandate. This is a part of your contract. This is something we have to do. You're not meeting your responsibilities as an institute if you're not doing it. So with that education, we can get to some more dialogue about, well, if your people want volunteering, then someone will be assigned. So this is a part of, and you make it a part of their PD, or you make it a part of their responsibilities. You give them kudos when they do a good job. Giving people some accolades helps them feel good about that time, that commitment to time that they're making to make these different initiatives work for everybody. So trying to get everyone in a cohesive unit, organizing, getting people to a place where they're feeling good about what it is that they're doing so they can provide the protection for all the other individuals that are there.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Antoinette Jones, AFGE Local 3840's Women's Fair Practice Coordinator and EEO Advisory Council Chair. Antoinette, tell me a little bit about your agency and the work that you do at NIOSH for our listeners who may not be familiar.
Okay. NIOSH is the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. So in the name, you understand it deals with occupational safety and health. A lot of the rules that OSHA enforces, NIOSH helps to write or does the research for those rules. So we have a division of small business. We help regulate how OSHA issues standards in the small business areas. We're dealing with a new field of nanotechnology. We deal with toxicology and epidemiology. All of these things, how they affect the occupational safety and overall worker health. We deal with mine safety. There's a lot of things in the agency that are initiated, but we see them carried out by other agencies.
When you hear people in the press or perhaps some on Capitol Hill who denigrate federal employees or question their effectiveness for the public at large, knowing what you know about your agency and being intimately involved with the work that's done, how does that make you feel?
I feel that the public's misinformed. There is a really big perception about what we do and how much we do it for. There's a lot of information that says that we're overpaid and we don't have to adhere to normal work practices, but I would disagree with all of that. We have an opportunity to serve the public, and a lot of us are doing it at not competitive rates. We are underpaid, and sometimes we have to put in a lot of work and a lot of volunteer time. And I do so because I live in America. It's a privilege. It is a privilege and an honor. But we would like to receive some recognition as well, that we have given up a little bit of that competitive thing that we could earn in the workplace if we were not federal employees, you know. But we have sacrificed as well. And we appreciate being able to serve our public as well.
As I sense your commitment to federal service and your passion for what you do, what brought you to this point? What brought you to work for the federal government in this capacity?
That the federal government was ahead of cutting edge ideas about employment. Occupational safety and health, it allowed me to take a look at the world differently. You know, there's an initiative by CDC to get all of their workers to have a workplace that allows them to telework and that allows those federal employees to have flexi time. Those conveniences that allows for a better worker, a more efficient worker, that allows the government to be the model workplace, those practices are being pushed at the CDC, and NIOSH is under the CDC. So those two initiatives are working hand in hand, and I see that as an opportunity for work to change its definition. As the work environment begins to change, people are going to change their relationship with work, and you're not going to have to do it all the time in a 9-to-5 situation. So that's what really brought me to federal employment.
How does the mantra of doing more with less impact you at NIOSH?
Wow. We are seeing the fiscal responsibility of doing more with less at NIOSH. And science used to be an area where it was like an open hole where people just poured a lot of resources into it, and there wasn't a lot of accountability or responsibility. What I see now is that there is a big push to make science fiscally responsible, so the outcomes have to be present. If we can no longer have the luxury of studying a particular issue for 10 or 20 years and not producing something. In the private sector, you might have an opportunity to study something and take it to test market, and it takes 10, 20 years to get that out. Well, you're dealing with federal dollars. You're dealing with the public's money. So at this point, the federal government is demanding that science produce a product and produce a product that allows the people to see where the money went, how we are to be accountable for it, and what the next step is with this particular product that was produced. So that's where I see the doing more with less. There are initiatives to make science more fiscally responsible.
And ultimately, then, what brought you to the labor movement as well?
What brought me to the labor movement was I saw the disparities, in treatment of employees. Being a part of AFGE, I saw how employees were in an institution that I revere. I thought it was a great idea to work at CDC and then NIOSH. I saw employees being mistreated, and I wanted an opportunity to be able to sit and have dialogue and have that conversation, because I feel strongly if we have an opportunity to educate each other about our differences, we're going to walk away from that table and we're going to feel better about each other at the end of the day.
As you continue on with your classes here this week and the things that you've already learned, mm-hmm. are you finding that there are items in there that you'll be able to take back and apply in your position as the chair of the EEO Council?
Definitely. The class is so informative. The EEOAC training is done by Frank, and Frank is just excellent. He is a good presenter, and he makes it real, and we share with real-life situations, and it allows us a bit of anonymity so we can examine how the possibilities or particular outcomes could happen, and we have an opportunity and a responsibility to do that for the people we represent.
What's the impact of some of the workplace issues, the bullying, the denigration of employees? What's the impact on the employees and the product of work that gets pushed out?
First of all is morale. You have to get your head in the game, and if your head is not in the game, you cannot produce. And our employees sometimes experience that. And I will tell management, it is our responsibility to make sure they stay in a place where they feel good about the product they're producing, that they feel that they're valued as employees, that there is work that's being done, that they feel important. And it doesn't matter if you're the security officer at the front desk, or if you're the administrative assistant, or if you were that seasoned scientist, you still have an opportunity to feel good about what you do and what your contributions are. If you're clear about what the objectives are, there's transparency in the process, and that you're able to have some mobility, and even if not mobility, you can get recognition for the work when you do a job well.
Antoinette Jones, AFGE Local 3840's Women's Fair Practice Coordinator and EEO Advisory Council Chair. Antoinette, thank you so much for coming on the program today.
You are welcome. Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from AFGE's Region B Training Conference with Transportation Security Administration Local 778 President Vaughn Glenn.
I just earned my degree at Grantham University, and now I'm on my way to a promotion.
Grantham University?
The affordable online classes fit my schedule. Plus, I earn college credit for work experience.
How can I fast-track my degree at Grantham University?
Go to fasttrackedu.com.
Fasttrackedu.com?
Yes, fasttrackedu.com. If you're an AFGE member, you qualify for a tuition discount. Check out Grantham University today.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Please note, the following interview was conducted before AFGE reached an agreement with the Transportation Security Administration on the first ever labor contract for the nation's TSA officers. For more information, please visit AFGE.org.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Joined now by Vaughn Glenn, the local president of AFGE's TSA Local 778. Vaughn, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
You, of course, are a transportation security officer in Detroit, representing all of Michigan. What are some of the pressing issues that you face on the workplace every day?
Well, right now, one of our biggest things is eliminating our pass system. We want to go to the regular GS system, right? Every other federal agency has. The pass system that they put us on now is not sufficient at all. It's an unfair practice, and we're looking at the way that the system is structured. It's not really a fair way to evaluate the employee.
When we have dealt with this issue in the past with some of your colleagues, one thing, a recurring theme that came up was that the pass system is very subjective. Would you agree with that?
I truly will agree with that. Yes, I will.
And why is it so subjective? What makes it subjective?
You're not being evaluated on your on the exact functions that you're performing on a daily basis. You're being evaluated on, sometimes we're using equipment that we don't even have, and we're being tested on this knowledge or equipment that's outdated to us, and we got a new way. And when it comes down time to the evaluation, it's a pretend that this is what the way the situation is. How would you react to this? Well, no, let's not do that. Let's work on what we're doing today, and let's get evaluated on that.
Are you ever tested in ways or on methods that you do use?
You are, but not that frequently.
If the pass system were to go away and you would move to the GS, what would that do for the employee morale at your worksite?
It would boost it tremendously. I mean, it would really boost it tremendously. This pass system that they got us on now is just, it's horrible. I mean, every federal officer in our airport would love to be on the GS system.
Do you think that it would be a little bit easier to judge workers objectively by using the GS schedule?
Yes, I do.
So what do you think it's going to take to get that shift? What will it take to convert from PASS to GS?
Well, it's going to take an act of Congress, literally. But we need to, you know, I think as long as we're staying on the right track with AFGE, we have come a long way with AFGE. I mean, we didn't have anything, as you're aware of, you know, in over a 10-year struggle. You know, I mean, we were just awarded arbitration last week. So, you know, things are coming along, you know, and of course we want it to happen like right now, but, you know, it's a way. It is coming along. I don't know. I hope if they actually look at this system and look at what's going on, you know, anybody with a common sense will say, you know, this is not working. Let's do this. Let's put them on GS.
Would you say that the PASS system is the biggest concern that employees come to you with?
Yes, I do, and especially now because we are in the middle of our PASS system, and now they're changing the rules on us that they're terminating people over this system. I mean, and it's got to go, and it's not a fair system. Like I said, people are not even being tested on the, you know, on the stuff where they need to know, where they should be knowing.
Those are people's lives at stake there then, their livelihoods, right?
Livelihood. I mean, Josh, you can come to work today and you're going tomorrow.
Just because of a subjective grading system.
Exactly.
Since AFGE has become the exclusive representative of TSOs, how have things changed for you for the better at the workplace?
Well, I'll put it like this. I've been with AFGE since my first days at TSA, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I've seen them come and go. I've seen, you know what, they told us that we would never have a union. They told us that we would never have bargaining rights. They told us all of these that we would never do, and I want to say that I'm the local president. So I came from not, you know, you guys will never do this and you never had that, and to look where we are today.
How long have you been with the agency?
I've been with the agency for 10 years.
And what brought you to federal service to serve at TSA?
Actually, I was a screener before TSA. Okay, and when TSA, after the tragic events of 9/11, which I was working that day, and, you know, when you wake up and you look at the, you know, the breaking news stories on the news, and I think something that went through everybody's head was, I hope that didn't happen in my airport. That really made a difference. When we went to work and we found out, you know, all the rumors that was going on throughout that day until they actually came with the exact, you know, facts of the cases or what happened, that really hit home really bad. When we became federalized, when we took over the airports, my objective was, you know what, not on my watch. I will never see that again as long as I'm in this airport. I mean, it was to see that the airport was totally empty and people were stranded and, you know, wow, that really hit home.
I sense a very strong amount of pride in your voice, a lot of passion in your job. Why are you so passionate about what you do?
Because I see the importance of what I do. Not only that, I fly a lot also. And I know how important it is to do what we do. You know, people, you know, it's a lot of politics in there and stuff. They put it, you know, but I see the importance. You know, if I scrap all of that, I love what I do. I love my job, and I see why I have to do what I do.
Of course, we hear and see different news reports about issues that might happen, but by and large, do you think that the flying public appreciates and understands the commitment that you give to your country?
You know what? Yes, I do, and I'm going to tell you a story. We had a group of little Girl Scouts, I mean young Girl Scouts, and they came through the airport, and their leader was like, all right, guys, 1, 2, 3, and they all shouted out, thank you for keeping us safe. That right there, that outweighs anything else and anybody or anything else had to say. I mean, I'm an ex-Marine and I'm a former Marine, and I was like ready to go into a tear when they did that to us. I mean, that was just the most awesome thing that I've ever seen.
It yes. makes you feel good to be appreciated at the work site.
It does. It does. It does.
Do you think that your union membership with AFGE will further allow you to be appreciated at the work site?
Yes, I do. I really do. You know, our membership with the being in AFGE, it does kind of bring, it's a sense of belonging, it's a sense of pride that you have there.
Since AFGE has become that exclusive representative, as we noted before, do you see the morale overall throughout TSA, and particularly at your airport, increasing?
Yes, I have. First, we're accomplishing so many things that was never, was just off the table before. And they came in and said, you guys deserve this, you can have this, and lo and behold, we're getting this. So, I'm seeing a lot of people standing back like, wow, these guys have made one plan. They can actually do some things for us.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Vaughn Glenn, the president of AFGE's TSA Local 778. Vaughn, aside from some of the issues that we've talked about already, what are your top priorities as a local president at AFGE?
My priorities as a local president, A, I would like to organize, and I want to get more membership in there because, A, there's strength in numbers. But, B, we all have a unit that we need to belong to. We really do. We can go to management with 10% of our membership and say we would like this, or we can go to management with 100% saying we demand that. So what you guys want to do? So, and I bring that, and that's my speech. I give it to them, and they understand that. And when we go with our management and we go with our numbers behind us and we tell them, this is what the majority wants. Not, you guys get statistics and you get charts and say, well, this is what we put together and we think you want this. No, I got blood and guts saying that this is what we want. Can we do this?
Take me through a typical workday for you on the job as a TSA officer.
As a TSA officer, I report to work, say around about noon. I go into a formation. With this formation, we give briefings on security, saying these are new things, there's things to look out for, things that's, intelligence. We assume our floor. We assume take our position on our floor. From this time, I go to conduct my duties, whatever my assignment is. As a TSA officer that's also an AFGE member, I'm wearing two hats now, so I'm also doing a lot of AFGE activities. Whatever the situation dictates, I will respond to it.
What are some challenges that you face whenever you're dealing with the flying public? Do you think that they fully understand what your role is there in the airport?
What I really think that they need to understand is, A, we don't make not a single rule there. Whoever makes that rule, we have orders. We got marching orders. And they say, but what they really need to understand is why the people who's making these rules are doing it. And I wish that they could share more intelligence with them as far as, well, this is what we get, this is what we know, and this is why we have to do this. Unfortunately, I'm at a limit to what I can say to the traveling public. I can't say, well, in my intelligence briefing this afternoon, we found out that blah, 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 and this is why we got to do this from now on. I do want you to understand that officer that gets seen not doing that job, it's going to face some serious consequences for his actions. So please don't take it off on his officer. He has marching orders he had to follow. And, please be mindful and respectful of him that, A, he's going to either hear from the traveling public, or B, he's out of a job.
Do you think that's one of the largest misunderstood things about the job, is that people don't quite understand sometimes what you're doing or why you're doing it?
Exactly. It is. I wish if they could just give these people the same, and I understand why we can't, I'm a former military, but if they can give these people the same intelligence that we get, or the same, it makes sense. At the end of the day, it will make sense, but, I kind of wish they could put it out to them a little bit more.
As we had discussed a little earlier, of course, you're in the middle of negotiating a contract with
yes.
TSA management. What are your thoughts on that at this point?
I am so happy. One of my coworkers is actually on the bargaining team himself, so he's kind of giving me feedback on the way things are going, and I'm very excited. I can't wait to take it back to my members and let them know that this is where we at, this is what we're proposing. Anything that we get is better than what we had, because we didn't have anything at first, but I'm truly grateful for that.
What would a signed contract, when that time comes, what would that mean to you personally as someone who has been with the agency since day one and even before then?
That would mean a sign of victory. I was doing this job at one time when this job was $6 an hour. It wasn't living, I was doing this job when they didn't have dedicated people doing this job. Now, you got some good, hard-working people here, And, you know, they have the same passion that I have in this job. So it makes a difference. I mean, and when we come in here and they told us that, no, you're not going to get this. I mean, they wrote this in a footnote when they wrote the bill, saying that they were not and they should not have this. And all of a sudden, we're here. So, I mean, to see them sign that paper, that's just putting icing on the cake right there. That's really.
We talked about what brought you to public service. What brought you to the labor movement?
I'm from Detroit, Michigan, so all of my family members served in the auto industry in one form. You know, it was the big three. You had Ford, Chrysler, General Motors. So I can remember family gatherings, family dinners or whatever. Most of the women would be off in the kitchen or swapping recipes, and most of the men would be at the TV watching the game, talking about the UAW, talking about what the union was doing, and that was just you was in the union. I mean, you just had that. And I always wondered, what did they mean by the union? I always wondered, what did that term mean? And, you know, I can remember telling them the difficulties that they had, but the story was always ended up. But the union was able to, and that resolved the issue. I'm like, wow, well, whatever this union is, I want to be a part of it. So when I had that opportunity, I was like, I wasn't quite sure exactly what all the union was or what the union could do, but I know I wanted to be a part of. And as I got involved and more involved and began helping out people and representing people and learning how to represent, wow, we got a lot of, this is okay.
As you look forward to the rest of 2012, what are you hoping to accomplish?
As I look forward to the rest of 2012, I hope to, we're at the end of our contract. We're at the end of negotiating our very first contract. After we negotiate this contract, we have to put it in place. And, you know, we got a lot of work ahead of us. We do. But I just want this to be everybody, you know, I want to increase our membership. I want to increase our organizational skills. I want to, it's so much stuff that we want to get accomplished. I really, you know, it's so much stuff we want to do.
Von Glenn, the local president of AFGE's TSA 778 out of Detroit. Thank you so much for your time, your service to the country as a Marine, and of course as a transportation security officer.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having us on.
Thank you to our guest this week, AFGE 6th District National Vice President Arnold Scott, National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health Local 3840 Women's and Fair Practices Coordinator Antoinette Jones, and Transportation Security Administration Local 778 President Vaughn Glenn. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by MetLife and Grantham University.